everybody. On this episode of I Talk Movies, we're talking with Nikki Suhu and Michael K. Feinstein about their new film, The Browsing Effect. Let's do it.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of I Talk Movies. This is the show where we talk to the people both in front and behind the camera about the films that they bring to the theater, to your TV screen, or on your mobile streaming device. I'm Frank Moran. My guests today are two of the talented people behind the new film, The Browsing Effect, which explores the endless world of possibilities in a dating app and how that affects a small group of friends. The film is going to be available on digital and demand on April 9th. Please welcome actor Nikki Suhu and writer-director Michael K. Feinstein.
Hi, nice to be here.
Oh, yeah, thank you for having us.
Gosh, the pleasure is all mine. thanks for taking time out of your day to come and chat. So, I got a chance to screen the film, so that was very cool to see this film. And we'll talk about that in a second, but I just want to get a little backstory about the two of you folks, and then we'll dive into The Browsing Effect. So, Michael, you started off growing up as a writer and director. What was the first thing that kind of spoke to you and saying, like, whoa, that is a job I could have? Was it the writing? Was it the directing?
You know, I was lucky because my father actually owned a video store in Providence, Rhode Island, so I grew up surrounded by movies, and I always knew that I wanted to, you know, be a part of it. And, you know, I think there was a point when I was very young that my father explained to me that the people you see on camera aren't making it up as they go along, that there are people behind it who are controlling what they say and what you see. And as soon as I knew that there was someone with that amount of control, that's what I wanted to be.
A controller.
That's right, yes. All right, I can just hold on to everything. Nikki, I understand you got involved first in dancing.
Yes.
But now, was acting something that came later, or is it something that you always had an interest in, but dancing was kind of your first love?
I started out dancing when I was two, so I didn't really have too many passions before that.
Just bottles?
yes. Sleeping, eating, yeah, pretty much. But I got introduced to acting when I was in high school, and I honestly kind of fell into it. You know, my parents had given me the privilege of trying a lot of different things when I was younger. I tried basketball, I tried tennis, and you know, softball, and all these things. And acting was kind of just another one of those ones. And it kind of ended up working out for me, and it turned from a hobby to more of a passion, and now a career. So. Lucky me.
For you, when you're trying, and those are great when you have parents that allow you to try such a wide variety of things.
Yeah.
As you're trying them, what is the feeling inside you, that moment that comes when you realize, this is cool, but, you know, I can just do this for fun, or that, whoa, this is really cool, this is something I would like to keep doing?
You know, I think it differed for my different types of passions. Like for dance, I never wanted to be a professional dancer. I just honestly loved the feeling of expressing myself without words. But when it came to acting, you know, I ended up kind of being somewhat successful young. And so it was kind of taking its own path itself and saying, you're good at this. You know, maybe you should continue to pursue it. And I just followed and said, okay. I'll keep trying, sure. You know, so a lot of opportunities that I've gotten in entertainment have come, I feel like they've been dropped on me, you know, and I just had to say okay and go with it. So when people talk about destiny and stuff like that, I actually kind of believe in it mainly because of my acting career, because I never grew up wanting to be an actor. I didn't know that that was even a possibility or something to think about. But it's been very good to me, and I'm so grateful and blessed for all the opportunities that I've been given.
Now, Nikki mentioned the ability of doing something without worrying about words. For you, Michael, when you decided, like, whoa, I want to have total control, writing and directing, is it you just staying at home as you're growing up, just kind of writing? Were you writing short stories? Were you writing kind of your version of screenplays?
Well, first I want to say that I don't want total control. I just want most of it.
Oh, okay. All right.
And yes, you know, when I was younger, I would write little plays, and or I would write a comic book, or, you know, I would write a lot when I was younger. And, yeah, you know, and my parents definitely pushed me to consider writing as kind of the focal point of storytelling. You know, I knew that I liked movies, but it was my parents who really said, well, storytelling is really, you know, where your passion lies. Why don't you try writing. And, you know, I went to writing camps and all of that kind of stuff that you can do when you, you know, when you have that type of passion. So, yeah.
Is, because I've never been to a writing camp. Is that, is a writing camp kind of like what I think is like summer camp for kids, but you're just, instead of doing archery or
yeah,
kind of
you know,
you're doing
it's,
writing?
It, you know, yeah, there's, it's a lot of people with kind of bad skin, you know, convening around a table and telling stories about, you know, oh, well, my, the boy back at my school doesn't like me the way I like him, or my grandfather died, you know, all the type of drama that you might have when you're 14 or 15 years old, and you try to write a story around that. Oh, my dog ran away, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, and you learn the basics of, or you have a protagonist, and maybe you have an antagonist, and all the kind of fundamentals that you end up learning. I mean, a lot of the stuff you learn in those early camps, you still learn if you take a writing class in your 20s. You know, it's the fundamentals.
Does it still end, though, in a big end-of-summer kind of competition amongst everybody?
I don't remember a competition. It was, you know, you had a final project, and, you know, people would read it, et cetera. But there wasn't a winner, thank God.
So when it came time to go to college, you went to the Tisch School at NYU. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What, are you from the East Coast originally?
Yeah, I'm from Rhode Island.
Okay, so was that always like, if I want to pursue this, NYU is the place to be, as opposed to maybe coming out to USC or anything?
No, I wanted to go to USC or UCLA, and a handful of months before I would apply, my mother came down to my room in tears saying, just wait 4 more years to go out west. So I said I would apply to NYU. And, you know, I ended up visiting it and really liking it. But originally I had an idea, I really wanted to go outside of my comfort zone, maybe go, be in a big campus school filled with lots of green and stuff. But I went and visited NYU, and I fell in love very quickly. But no, that was not originally my plan.
I feel like the nice thing, though, is that when you go to school, whether it's out here on the West Coast for dance, or you're going to NYU, the Tisch School, you make those friendships that can definitely pay off later in life. I mean, I know, like, for you, you brought in your cinematographer was your freshman roommate.
Yeah, he was my freshman year roommate, you know, probably one of the first 3 people I met in college, and was someone who I stayed in touch with. And when I had an idea to shoot a feature film, he was one of the first people I called. And, you know, you're thinking about those early conversations you had in your dorm room about the type of movies you'd want to make when you're able to make them. And, you know, you meet kindred spirits. You meet people who are trying to accomplish the same thing you are trying to accomplish. And, you know, some people look at that as competition. Or you can look at it as, here's someone who could potentially help me accomplish my goals.
As I say, like, what a rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. So if you're helping each other, you can succeed much farther than if you're always competing against one another.
Yep.
For you, speaking of competition, we're talking about auditioning. What is, comparing to an acting audition or a dancing audition, which one is more stressful to you?
Dance by far. I hate dance auditions. I refuse to go to them anymore because it actually makes me not want to dance at all.
Really?
I personally like dance because I feel like it's collaboration. It's actually about connecting with those around you and feeling their energy. I mean, that's what I grew up doing, is competitive dancing, but on teams. So you were trying to be like each other and move as one. Whereas I think in the entertainment industry, a lot of dancing is about standing out and being an individualist. And it feels a lot more competitive, and it feels it's missing that part that I actually loved the most about it. And I don't like it. I'm not a very competitive person. So I'm like, hey, if you want to win, I want everyone to be happy. So please, like, take it. But then, you know, the success, your success is not as good probably that way.
Well, because what I know of dancing auditions is what I've seen in, like, TV shows and films, where it's just everybody's dancing in big groups and somebody's walking behind and just tapping people.
Yeah.
And is that pretty much just true to form?
Yeah, like you'll go in and you'll perform in a small group, like 4 to 5 or something, then they'll line you up and then they'll tap the ones, or they'll say, like, your number, your number, your number, you stay, and then the rest can go. But you're performing it in front of everyone, and it's very nerve-wracking. I definitely think that dancers are amazing for what they do because they work really hard and they don't always get as much notoriety for what they do. But it's a hard profession, emotionally, physically. mentally. So,
because I mean, I feel like with especially dancing, if you want to consider that as a career, there is almost a ticking clock on.
Totally. I mean, especially not only just for your body, but your look. Mm-hmm. You know, there aren't too many background dancers that are in their 50s.
Yeah, so. That's... So you were down south originally, the Orange County area.
Yes.
And then you came up here to uh-huh. the Los Angeles area.
Uh-huh.
When you first, did you have a lot of connections when you first came up here?
Well, I started acting when I was 15. So even okay. though I was going to high school in Orange County at OSHA, the School of the Arts, I would still, my parents would drive me up to be in LA and work as a professional in LA. So then by the time I went to UCLA, I already did have a network and connections in the business because I did start when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm. So it makes it nice. So it's like, finally, when you get to UCLA, like, all right, yes, I don't have to worry about those long commutes anymore. That's got to be the worst part about
you
it.
You know, the crazy thing is when I first went to UCLA, I was 18 and I couldn't drive yet. I didn't have my license. And back then, Uber and Lyft was not a thing. And my mom was not about to have me, like, take a taxi somewhere. So she would drive up from Orange County, pick me up from UCLA, take me to my audition. That would be, like, 5 minutes long, drop me back off at UCLA, and then drive back home.
Holy, that is a supportive mom.
Oh, yeah. And she was a full-time professor.
Wow.
So, I mean, that just is to show, like, I am very grateful and lucky to have very supportive parents that work it out for me, you know.
But 18, you didn't have your driver's license yet.
No, you know, because my high school was 30 minutes away. You had to take a freeway to get there. My mom didn't want me to drive then. And so I always had friends that would drive me to school, so I didn't need to drive then. And then when I got to school, I was like, I guess I'm gonna have to learn. Like, everyone's trying to force me to learn. I'm like, but... can't someone else just drive me?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, come on. Yeah, I'm small. It's
yeah,
easy. Come on.
Yeah, you yes. just fit me in the trunk.
So for you, Michael, when you decided after the 4 years in New York and the mom guilt subsided, after the 4 years, was your mom thinking like, oh, he's going to love New York so much he's going to stay? Or had she over the 4 years gotten comfortable with the idea that, no, mom, after this I'm heading west?
You know, I think she'd gotten more comfortable with it. I mean, she doesn't like that I'm in LA still. It's been
hey, she came out to sick. Visit us when we were shooting.
My mother did craft services.
Yeah.
So she came out to help on the movie. But yeah, it's been 6 years. She still kind of blames LA for taking me. You know, any kind of
not the
bad news
shop.
I might have, it's LA's fault. I think there was a year or two where she didn't watch the Oscars because she felt like L.A. had been poor to me. So
it's a good supportive mom there, too.
That's right.
So, she she's not kidnapping me and forcing me to move back to Providence yet.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that.
Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have a brother, a younger brother, who's in Denver right now, working in the glamorous world of pharmaceuticals. And I have a sister who's studying fashion at Syracuse.
So she's the favorite because she stayed close to home.
I think for a short period of time, she will remain the favorite. But yes. She might be moving even further away than I am. So,
uh-oh. You see where you're kind of like, oh, now you're at the bottom. Yes. All right, you're too far away. I can't love you as much. You're too far away from me. So you've done short films
yeah.
as well. So as you're coming up with ideas for these, mm-hmm. When did you come up with the idea that, all right, this is worth a short film, or wait, this is an idea that I like, I'm going to hold on to it for a little bit and do some short films, get my reps in, and then I want to take this idea that I've had for a long time and then do a film with it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think like anything, filmmaking is a skill, and you get better at it from doing it. And, you know, that's why we all make short films first, because, you know, we can't make a feature film right out of the gate. I mean, every now and then someone gets to do that, but that's kind of a crazy happenstance. No, you make short films and you get used to just being on set. I mean, it's easy to talk about how you want to make a movie. You know, oh, I want to put the camera here, or I want it to feel like this, but being on set and being able to talk with your cinematographer and talk with your actors and, you know, plan your day, schedule. Those are all skills that you cannot learn unless you're doing it. So, yeah, early on, I knew I wanted to make short films just so I could, you know, get some experience. And someone had told me, and I forget who, that a good short film is like a joke. There's a setup and there's a punchline. It has to have those two things and hopefully nothing more. So I start thinking about ideas in that way. You know, what's my setup and is my punchline clever enough to justify the setup? And I think, you know, if you look at my short films, I think they fall into that category of a setup and then, a little twist or, of some sort.
So for you growing up studying at NYU and you're doing these short films, kind of learning, because I feel like part of it is also learning how you want to run a set as well, too, if you're going to be the director of this. For you, are you working on other friends' productions as well, kind of seeing how they're running sets and kind of figuring out what kind of techniques and approaches they like, what you like, and kind of coming up with your own kind of way that you want to run a set?
Yeah. I was definitely on friends' sets and, you're soaking up as much as you can. At the end of the day, you can be super deliberate and say, oh, I want to run a set like X, Y, and Z. But often you get on set and it's about managing your own emotions and managing the emotions of others. That, yes, if life existed in a vacuum, you could do everything exactly the way you want it to. But things come up, this actor dropped out and we have to find another actor. Or this location isn't working exactly the way we want it to work. So ultimately, it's about how you deal with those obstacles. And, you can tell yourself, when obstacles happen, I want to be calm. But whether or not you're actually able to do that, that's a whole other question.
Yeah. Nikki, for you, when you were on a set, what are you looking for in terms of a director? Do you want somebody that's going to be there giving you a lot of notes? Do you want a lot of feedback? Do you want somebody that might just say one little thing and then kind of let you do your own thing?
I'm a high achiever and I like the feedback. I want to know that I'm on the right track doing something that makes you happy. To me, that's what I feel my role is as an actor, is to come in and bring your vision to life. And so I want you to be happy with it. But what's great about Michael is he's very open-minded to suggestions and to trying it multiple ways, So if he had an idea and mine might have been conflicting of what I originally thought, he's like, let's try both, so we can both be expressive and he'll take the one that's better. But we were co-creating, I think, at the same time. I appreciate those types of directors that want to talk with me through the character in the scene and come up with, really what's going on in the actor, in that character's head. I mean, he wrote it, so it's a lot more intimate to him, which is easier as a director to have written the story mm-hmm. that you're directing the actors on, I think. But I appreciate the communication and the feedback from my directors.
I mean, so much of I knew my script lived or died on the authenticity of the characters and how authentic they felt. So I was so happy to all of a sudden be able to take these characters from outside of my head and have someone else imbue them with their own characteristics, because I don't want them to all just be different shades of me. And it wasn't really until Nikki came on board and all the other actors came on board that the characters really became who they were, because at the end of the day, yes, I might know the Rachel character to a certain degree, but she's going to know her better because I'm a dude.
Yeah, actually, funny thing about the whole casting process. When I came into audition for this film, I was a hot mess. They called me into the room. I didn't even have my heels on yet. So I'm like trying to put them on as I'm running in the room. My shirt is half tucked in. I'm like all over the place. Then I'm flustered. So I'm forgetting all my lines. I'm like, I'm sorry. Can we start over? Like I'm a hot mess right now. And then next thing I know, I booked it. And I asked him later, I'm like, why did you book me? Because that was a horrible audition, like horrible first impression. He's like, no, you completely embodied the character. That's exactly who Rachel was. And so I was like, oh, that's good, But yeah, I think that's what it is that he cast it off of essence. And they casted very well in that way. Like, I think all the characters, because I was saying his lines wrong, but he's like, no, but you have the essence of a character. It's exactly what I'm trying to get to, But with, the outline of his words and kind of the co-collaboration of that together with my essence.
And is that something that even at the table read, you've cast all these roles, you're listening to you're kind of seeing your script come to life for the first time. Are you then, based on what they're bringing to your words, kind of going back and doing another pass after that to kind of just tweak some stuff based on what they're giving
100%.
You?
100%. Yeah. I was doing drafts while we were shooting. In fact, that was some of the best writing that I did, was around that time. Even before, while we were casting, even hearing the words come out not the way I want to hear them from an actor that I would never cast in a million years, that's super helpful. Because if you hear 20 different actors deliver the same line over and over and over and over again in slightly different ways, some very different, some almost exactly the same as the last person who came in, you start to see the words kind of detached from your original intention, and you're able to kind of, because it's so tough to rewrite because you're rereading your own words and you're hearing it in your own head. You know, the toughest part about writing is escaping yourself. Mm. So the moment that you can start to see your characters outside of your own frame of mind, it becomes super helpful, and you can start seeing, you know, avenues in the story that you wouldn't have seen before.
That's really cool. So were there any story arcs that were altered or changed based on whether it's the auditions or the actual actors that you cast to kind of...
I wouldn't say full arcs, but little things or mannerisms or, we had an actor, a really talented guy, David Hull, who's on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And he has kind of a small part of Rachel's boyfriend right at the beginning.
Todd Tom.
And yes.
The tapas.
Yeah.
He was so funny, and he had an energy that I knew would be kind of counter to the energy that already existed in the scene that he was entering. So because of his audition, I kind of stretched out his part and kind of pushed certain elements of his character that I wouldn't have known to push had I not heard those words coming out of his mouth.
Mm. I feel like for the Browsing Effect, we're watching that first big party scene, which is really cool. The way it shot, a lot of it is single take, which is cool. But I feel like watching that scene, I could identify. I've probably been multiple people in this environment at any point in a given time, whether it's the to Tom, where he's just doing that awkward laugh. People are telling something that's like, oh, I'm just going to laugh because that's what I should do at this moment. I should just laugh.
Totally. Yeah, you know, and I think so much of our social lives when we move past college are these type of parties, and which is why it was kind of important to me to start the movie on that because, after that, a lot of the movie is about dating and these kind of intimate interpersonal relationships, but it kind of all sprouts from these larger settings, these parties where you can be a lot, you know, depending on your mood, you can be a lot of different people at a party. You can be the guy, the wallflower, you can be the life of the party, anywhere in between. And I like that each of these characters were kind of reacting to the party atmosphere and what happens in the party in different ways. It's a good way to get to know the characters.
So coming up with the origins of this film, was it just seeing the explosion of Tinder back in the early 2010s that kind of gave you the idea? Or had you had friends that had done it and seeing their successes or even your successes or failures kind of led to this whole script?
Yeah. I graduated from NYU, and I think like 2 months later, Tinder went live. And I was newly single, and I was about to move to a place where I didn't know anyone. So I started going on a lot of dates very quickly. And for a while, it was my social life. And as I was going on these dates, I started to kind of recognize that, you know, I was experiencing something that a lot of people were experiencing, and that TV and film hadn't quite caught up with it yet. Every time I would see, you know, app dating portrayed in film, it would be a punchline about people who are desperate or people who are lonely or people who want to get laid. And while those archetypes certainly exist in all of these apps, it's just one slice of the pie. And I was recognizing that I was having such a wide range of experiences, and that I was meeting people with lots of different motivations, you know, to find love, to make a friend, to, you know, to just have a hookup
or
anything.
There you go, yes.
You know, and that excited me as a writer, this idea that, okay, now I have all this experience about something that hasn't really been reflected on screen yet. So once I had that in mind, it became about, well, what's, you know, saying, oh, I want to make a movie about app dating, that doesn't really mean anything because that's not a story. That's a subject or a theme. So I had a subject and a theme for a while before I figured out, well, what is the right story by which to tell, to kind of talk about these themes.
And it feels like social media has made it, I don't know, in a way easier or harder in the sense where it's like if you were breaking up with somebody, you could delete your, you know, from Facebook, but you may have friends in common. It's easier, I feel like, or harder to avoid them because you can see them in your feeds, whether it's whatever social media platform you're using. We're just like, I didn't really want to see any more of this person. Here they are, scrolling up.
Similar to my character, Rachel, I am a huge advocate of being friends with your exes. So I always want to see them. I'm like, what's going on? How are you doing? What's going on in your life? Want to hang out? Want to hang out with my new boyfriend? Yeah.
But is that an easy... Because I know in the film, you said it's been 4 months. We should be able to be friends now. Do you feel 4 months is
that.
The... 4 months is the...
That's a long time. Yeah. I'm like, are you ready yet? I'm ready, like, the next day.
The next day? Come on, Nikki, really?
I mean, I guess it's different if you're the one breaking up with them.
Yes.
Which is usually the case. So I'm always ready.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
If I got to the point where I actually broke up with you, then I was over it.
But yet there's still something about them that you may not want to be romantically involved with them.
Yeah,
but
you still want them in your life. Yeah, they made you who you are.
I understand the instinct, which is we spent all this time, you know, developing this relationship, these feelings. And I think the pragmatic part of a lot of people goes, well, I should be able to salvage some of this. You know, I only have so many people in my life that I feel this connected to. Why should I throw all of this away, you know, just because we've broken up? And the answer to that is it's because it's very difficult to be friends with your ex, you know, unless you have as much confidence as Nikki does. I mean,
it is hard, I will say. Like, there are many moments that are gray area'd, and you don't know when is okay to be close or have to step back. And it can hurt to kind of go through that back and forth. But personally, I choose to have some relationship versus none.
I'm old-fashioned, so I just like my exes to watch my Insta story and just to know
that they do it. How old-fashioned of you, Michael, yes.
Yeah.
I guess part of it is like how you actually met. Because if you had met as friends first, you knew each other for 3 or 4 years, and then you started dating.
Exactly.
I could see that urge to want to, like, well, we were friends for so much longer than we dated.
Right, we knew how to function before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was actually one thing we were talking about earlier that's different about dating from an app versus dating in real life. Or meeting them in real life is, in real life, there is this moment where you're with somebody, spending time with them, and there's no definition of what your relationship is to each other, and you actually end up saying to yourself, I want to hang out with them more. And then it turns into a date.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with these dating apps, we come into it, and we're already put in the position of having to figure out, like, no, this is a date. Now we are both going to figure out if we're good for one another in this moment.
Which is actually one of my favorite things about app dating, the lack of ambiguity. See, for me, you know, the idea of having to wonder, oh, should this friend be more of a friend? Do they feel the same way back about me? That sounds like hell. I much like the idea. I'm a big fan of the idea with app dating, and I think it's why it's so successful, is that, okay, yes, you're walking in on a date. And who knows, maybe it'll go well, maybe it won't. But I at least know that this person is single, and they at least think the photos of me are cute. You know, granted, you know, those photos went through years of Photoshop done by professionals. but still, I know that there's at least that. There's always ambiguity in dating, but I feel there's just slightly less when it comes to at least the beginnings of relationships an app date.
I think, though, that the hard part is that it is missing the essence. You can't feel somebody's full essence off of a picture and a few words. Whereas in real life, when you meet them for that moment, at least knowing that you like their essence, because I meet a lot of guys, like I'll go out, I'll meet them on the dating app, and they have all the credentials that I want in a man. I'm like, oh, good, you're this tall, you have a good job, you live close to me, I think your picture is cute. Then I meet you, and I'm like, nah, we don't vibe.
That's right.
But we should have been able to vibe, and I just wasted a whole date, you know, on the fact with that I didn't even vibe with you, because I didn't even get to talk with you. Whereas, like, I think it's cutting out relationships that could have been something in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they come with the intention of, I'm going to date you, then a lot of times I've noticed that the guys don't want to be your friend if you don't want to date them.
True, it can be like an either-or proposition.
Right, but I'm like, but you're still a cool person, and why wouldn't you want another cool person just in your life?
Yeah.
But they're like, nah, you don't want to date me, I can't do it. And that's kind of strange to me.
Well, there also feels like at times the civility, whether it's, and I'm equating it to like online forums, where the way some people will talk, whether on a dating app, I don't know if you'd ever talk to that way to a person in real life.
Right.
And I mean, it could go to what you're saying about that directness.
There's no accountability.
Yeah.
There's no, oh, we have this friend in common, so I'm not going to say this very rude thing because they might tell this friend in common that I'm rude. I mean, there's no accountability. So you got to hope that you're talking with a relatively decent person but if they start saying stuff that you don't like, then you press one button and you never see them again in your life.
That's very true. And I guess you could look at it the other way too. That directness could be, it's like you're just stating exactly what you want. And if somebody responds to that, then you're both on the same page.
Yeah.
Knowing exactly what you're getting yourselves into. Maybe.
I don't know why I've become so pro. You know, I'm not so pro online dating. I guess I'm just countering Nikki. There's certainly tons of issues with it. And it allows for a whole new sets of anxieties that I don't think have exactly existed in human form before. But I do think there are lots of good things about it as well. It's complicated.
Well, it's interesting because your character, Rachel, has broken up with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben starts exploring the world of the dating app. And as he kind of breaks it down, there's a nice kind of montage that we see, which is kind of cool. It's almost like a single take, but we just kind of keep swiping out the various people that he's dating. But he's breaking it down, and it's almost like he's trying to figure out how to win at a video game. It's like, all right, I keep doing this, like skills that he's got to get. Where I feel like he almost kind of loses the emotional attachment to it because all he cares about, like, oh, if I say this, or ask this, and this, I will get this at the end.
Yeah, because if you go about it saying, I'm just going to be myself and I'm just going to be true to who I am and I'm just going to show this person my soul, and then she doesn't text you back, how terrible of a feeling that is.
Yeah.
So you develop certain, I'm going to bring this up, or I'm going to talk this way, or I'm going to wear this shirt, or, a certain strategy. And then, it doesn't work out, and it feels slightly less. It always feels personal. I mean, being rejected, it can never feel good. People ask me, oh, what's a good way to put this person down? There's no good way, to tell someone, hey, thanks, but no thanks. It's never fun. But I think when you look at it like a video game, as you said, it can feel a little less personal when things don't work out. On the flip end of that, then maybe it makes it a little bit more difficult for someone to know the real you, at least at first.
Well, I feel like something that shows up here is, and maybe it's typical of people in their 20s, is that you get out of school, you have your circle of friends, and then life events start happening. So in this film, we see Melissa and James get engaged, and there becomes that comparison. It was like, is the grass greener on the other side? Or is it better to be in a committed relationship? Well, that's great. You found somebody you want to spend the rest of your life with. Oh, wait, no. I haven't been with that many people. And holy cow, you're single? I wish I could be doing that. It seems like that is a struggle that I think many people, 20s and sometimes even the early 30s,
can go
through.
Like people are, whether there's dating apps or not, people are going through those same struggles of comparing themselves to the people around them and what those life events are. And if you're living up to keeping up with the Joneses,
Yeah, that's true. Like, oh, I should already be married by this point. Oh, my friend's having a kid, and I don't even have a boyfriend yet or a girlfriend yet. What am I doing?
Yeah, I think, I think it's a very innate feeling. I'm sure, the first caveman looked at the other caveman and said, oh, why their cave's a little bit roomier than mine. I think this feeling that, you know, the person next to you has it more figured out than you do, or has is living a better life than you are, has existed forever. And it was really when I kind of keyed into that idea that the story started to fall into place. Because I think when you start thinking, oh, I want to make a movie about dating, the obvious thing is, oh, it's about someone who goes on a lot of dates, and at the end of it, he meets the one.
Yeah.
And I knew that that kind of couldn't be the movie, because that's been done so many times, and I wanted to tell, you know, something that felt a little newer and fresher. And I realized that, you know, this kind of complex, this grass is always greener complex, opened the story up to being about something larger. So then it became about, okay, this is a movie about how people's personal lives affect the personal lives of their friends. You know, one couple gets engaged, which causes the other couple to start dating a ton, which causes the engaged couple to go, oh, look at our friends who are dating a bunch. Maybe they're having all the fun that we're not, and they're only dating because they think the engaged couple has found, you know, some love that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And I was reading that you wanted to kind of do it sort of like the films from the 60s and 70s. Where you think of like a Woody Allen film, where it's, you know, multiple characters, multiple relationships, and there's not always a happy ending. Sometimes it's just happy enough.
Bittersweet.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, those were always my favorite movies, you know, Altman films and, you know, Mazursky and Albert Brooks, because they were funny, but it wasn't science fiction funny. You know, I think sometimes you see comedies and you're like, this does not exist. This could never happen on planet Earth, which is great. And, you know, people go to the movies for that. But I always loved movies that were funny and sad and romantic, because that's what life is. It's all of those things at once. And you shouldn't have to sacrifice, you know, any of the real drama because you're trying to make people laugh. I think people have the capacity to laugh one moment and then think inwardly the next. So, you know, it was my hope to. And because I felt like dating today wasn't entirely funny or entirely depressing. It was somewhere in the middle, or it was both at once. So I wanted to create, you know, a film with a tone that kind of reflected that, that it can be really difficult going on all these dates with strangers and maybe getting rejected and, you know, feeling like you're just a commodity. But it can also be really fun and exciting meeting new people. And, hey, you're making out with some stranger you didn't know 45 minutes before. I mean, there's an excitement to that as well. So I wanted to capture all of those feelings.
Well, speaking of funny, you also have Melissa in the film. She does improv, which I do as well. And so seeing just even, like, just short snippets of rehearsals and stuff, like, oh,
there's just something rough
about
it.
Yep, there's just something about watching, like, improv rehearsals on film. You're like, yeah, man, this is rough watching. what was it about improv that made you like, yeah, I would like to kind of inject this at least into one character's
life? I I'm trying to capture something, I guess, timely. And I felt like improv is just a part of the world today. It was like app dating. It's existed for a while. I mean, there has been online dating back to, the 60s and 70s. It was just small, just like there have been improv since that time. But, you know, I think the millennial generation has taken both of these things and turned them into industries. And, you know, I'm out here in L.A. I have, you know, half of my friends are on improv groups. And there's a real culture there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, something that I always find funny are people who take something very seriously and don't quite realize how, you know, actually silly it is. And I think that happens a lot of time with improv groups. You know, you have people taking something that is ridiculous very, very seriously, which in itself is funny.
That's true. Just, you know, if you go around UCB during audition time, whoo, baby.
Yeah.
It gets cutthroat around there. But I also, we do have you participating, somebody who doesn't like improv at all, your character, get involved in and helping teach a group of elderly people improv, which, oh man, I have never had any interest in doing that. I did it once for school kids and that was enough. I can't imagine doing it with elderly people.
They actually already do, they all live at that place and they do improv as a team together.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that is great.
So they were all about the acting.
Now, speaking of improv, I used the Clubhouse for filming
Good Eye, sequences yeah.
there. Yes, I've done well and bombed on that stage many a time. So, how did you get involved with the clubhouse? Was it just seeing other friends' shows there and like, oh, maybe I could use this? As
no,
location?
You know, it was the type of thing where we needed an improv space. So my producers reached out to every improv space in L.A. and you know, luckily there were a lot of them. And you know, the price was right, as is often the case. You know, when you're an independent film, you know, you want to have the best looking location possible, but a lot of times it comes down to a money issue.
Speaking of that, you did a Kickstarter for your film.
Yep.
And I was looking through that, and one of the rewards, like, we will write a dating profile for you.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like writing people's dating profiles for them?
Well, I think, you know, fortunately for me, you know, the people who bid on that were friends of mine who kind of knew what they were getting into. I don't think anyone was hoping, oh, this filmmaker is going to come in and he's going to write two sentences and suddenly I'm going to find the love of my life. So it was a lot about, you know, just trying to make people laugh. I mean, ultimately, you know, there are lots of different ways to make a good Tinder profile and there's lots of different ways to make a bad one. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to what the other person thinks and what they're looking for in their mood and all that kind of stuff. And this was just guys. I mean, girls, ultimately, you don't even need anything in your profile besides your pictures.
Nikki, is that the case?
Pretty much.
Yeah. That is it. There you go.
I would say. I mean, it's different with my guy friends. I feel like they're actually looking for quality relationships. So when I ask them about what they look for in the profile, they actually read all the captions and, you know, all the questions that you're answering. And they want to know that they're thoughtful and they'll be able to connect with you. But I would say, I mean, even on my own personal profile, you know, I start with a picture that is very much, I think, a representation of me and my essence. I'm in a place that I'm traveling to holding a cob of corn, and smiling really big about it. And I'm like, okay, if you like that photo, you'll probably like me as a person. But I follow it up by a sexy picture of me in, like, a very sexy outfit, just to show, like, a different look. But it's always surprising to me how many guys will like that photo. And my caption on that photo is, Don't be fooled. Like, I can hold a sexy face for as long as a photo.
But you should note that in the sexy photo, you're also holding corn.
I know. I really should hold the corn. Then I would feel like they knew me.
That's true. It's like you know all of me right here.
Yeah. But it's interesting how many people will like that sexy photo over the corn photo. And it actually means more to me when you like the corn photo because I know you like me for me, not because I look a certain way.
So is that already one way you're already screening somebody based on
kind
that?
Kind of. Sometimes. I mean, sometimes if you're cute enough, I'll swipe on you anyway.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm like, well, this is worth meeting you, I guess.
So, Nikki, because as I was reading that you were in a long-term relationship when the film was in production.
Yes.
So you didn't really explore the world of dating apps.
No, but since I had then, never tried it. Yeah.
You had jumped in.
So, oh, yeah.
what was the biggest learning curve going from somebody that hadn't really embraced that lifestyle to just doing that as a way of looking for somebody to be in your life?
Well, most of my past relationships had stemmed from friendships, hence the reason I want to be friends with them afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so coming into this world of online dating and being put in a situation to date this person, I felt there wasn't enough time for me to build a relationship with you that I even wanted you to cross the line into a potential person I'd want to date. Like I if you crossed that physical boundary for me, it was very shocking because I'm like, I don't know you. Like, why would you think that it's okay to hold my hand or to touch me in any way? Because I need to know that you like me as a person and mm-hmm. I like you as a person before I would even explore that. But I think there's a lot of expectation with dating apps that, oh, we're here to see if we vibe. And that's part of figuring that out. But it moved a lot quicker than I was ready for a lot of times.
I got into online dating to hold hands with strangers specifically.
That was it. There you go. What dating app lets me do this?
No, I literally had my guy friends because I was telling them my experiences and how shocked I was with these guys. And I'm like, yeah, they want to kiss me on the first date. And then my guy friends would be like, yeah, like if you don't kiss them on the first date, I don't date them anymore if I don't kiss them on the first date. And I'm like, what? But then you're missing out on so many good people. What if they're just not moving that quickly? You know, I'm like, gosh, guys, so forward.
I don't know. I mean, everything gets accelerated through that dating app, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
One thing that I did like that you did in the film, Michael, is that you have at various points, people want to, whether you talk to the younger self or talk to somebody through the dating app, the way you kind of visualize that, I thought was really cool.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, especially with the way that Ben, when he's interacting with, and you just see the long pauses where she just stays still until something happens. And it just really draws out, like, this is really awkward.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah,
and I, if you know, I imagine that's, you know, part of the reason why we haven't seen so many movies about this thing is, you know, it's a visual medium. And people staring at their phone isn't a very exciting thing to see. So as a writer, you start thinking about, well, what's a way that I can represent these feelings and these emotions in a less literal way that will still get across what I'm trying to get across? And I think also, you know, you're referencing that there are kind of surreal aspects to the movie. Online dating can feel surreal, you know, being thrust into these intimate relationships with people that you barely know. It allows room for the surreal in life because you don't exactly know what to expect. So I felt like even having these moments that were kind of taking place in a maybe alternate reality or a more surreal place still at the same time kind of touched upon the real elements of dating.
What I liked is that it still felt grounded. It didn't feel like you're, oh, man, this is really breaking the film at all. It's just all integrated, and it really made the film a much more enjoyable experience.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Thank you for letting me watch your film. So as we're going to wrap up, Nikki, I also know you do voiceover stuff, and you're reoccurring on The Resident.
Uh-huh.
You're doing voice on Resistance.
Star Wars Resistance.
Yeah. Anything else coming up you want to talk about?
I'm also on Shimmer and Shine, which is still playing, which is...
The Genies. Yes.
Nick Jr.
There you go. I've got a young daughter. I've seen Shimmer and Shine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Michael, about yourself, what are you working on now?
I'm actually excited to say that I'm going back to school to study film more.
Back to New York. No, just kidding.
I'm going to USC in the fall. Unfortunately, my parents will be going to prison, and I have to be on the crew team. But it should be an enjoyable 2 years of studying film, which is something I miss. I mean, in the process of making this movie, you know, you watch a lot of movies while you're making a movie. And I kind of found myself falling in love with old cinema again. And so I thought, you know, instead of rushing to make the next thing, I want to kind of buckle down and really start looking at the things that inspired me in the first place.
That's really cool. Well, if they want to stay up to date with either of you, and Nikki, I'll start with you, what's the best place to find you in the wide world of social media?
I am most active on Instagram, but I also have Twitter and Facebook, and you can find me just with my name, at Nikki Suhu, NikkiSoohoo.
Nice. And find her on Tinder, but like the corn cob photo.
I've never actually been on Tinder.
Oh, nice. Some other dating app. That's fine.
Hinge. Way to go.
Get with it, Frank. Come on. Michael, about yourself.
Yeah, if you want to follow me, you can follow me at FineDream on Instagram, FineDream. And I'm also at the 7-Eleven on Beverly and Robinson a lot. So if,
perfect.
You know, you can also catch me there.
Oh, excellent. Looking for Slurpees and looking for love. Mm-hmm. Right there, yes. So the film, The Browsing Effect, there's thebrowsingeffect.com. Is there a social media handle for the film as well?
Yeah, it's on Instagram. It is at Browsing Effect. So, you know, due to some legal decisions, we had to drop the in the Instagram handle. So it's just at Browsing Effect. So you can get all the updates there.
Awesome. A big thank you to Nikki Suhu and Michael K. Feinstein. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about
so
The Browsing
much
Effect.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Folks, that's going to do it for this episode of iTalkMovies. We'll be back with another episode soon right here on Popcorn Talk. Bye, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.